Do not adjust your radio dial. You are tuned in to the Mark Order Podcast. Join the Mark Order.
We're breaking beaches today, you guys. It is AEW Dynamite post show for Beach Break, July 8th, 2026. Oh my goodness, what a loaded show. The three of us are back in the house. I've been covering at Fight Club a couple of times while Sean's had to prioritize some other things, but I am here, Ryan is here, Joe is here. We've got a lot to talk about with this episode of Dynamite, but fellas, how we doing?
Kate, was that supposed to be a link you posted?
Yeah, it didn't go. I don't know what happened.
I'll take care of it.
Thank you. So here's the thing, you guys. I submitted to speak at Podcast Movement once again. But this time it's a selection panel and you have to vote. Like, there's a public vote. And so I am a woman who submitted to speak, which means if you don't vote for me, you hate women. That's just the way it goes. So if you don't hate women, you have to vote for me. I'm the only woman that's ever podcasted. Don't let your eyes be fooled. Joe has the idea. Vote for Kate, ? I don't know why you made it like a Panic at the Disco song with your unnecessary punctuation, but you should vote for me. So head over there. Please do vote. On a sincere note, I know everybody has like login fatigue from voting for shit, like it prompts your email or your Facebook or whatever, so I know it's fucking annoying to to be prompted for these things. I also know that there were some like Twitter viruses going around when podcasters were asking people to vote for stuff in the past. This one, I promise, is legitimate. I have specifically not DM'd people on social media for that reason. But it would mean a lot. I had such a good time in 2023. That's where I got to hang out with Joe. He got to see my vinyl obsession up close and personal. We got to experience the exterior of Casa Bonita. I'm very jealous that he got to
Casa Bonita.
Casa Bonita. But we got a lot to talk about. We got an AEW Dynamite that was full of new champions. Mercedes Moné aligning with the Divine Dominion. Willow Nightingale is back, but It's been a minute, fellas. How you doing, Joe? How are you? You look great over there. Other than wearing, that's not a Rutgers shirt. That can't be.
No, this is a.
Oh, okay. That makes the.
It did look like a Rutgers shirt.
The color and the font, but does that say Bug Eaters?
It does. That was the University of Nebraska's mascot name before they became the Cornhuskers.
I didn't know it could get worse than corn husking, honestly, but bug eaters, that's brutal. And not just because I'm vegan, that sounds terrible. Not a fan of that, but that is cool though. I love like anything vintagey, throwbacky. I have a set of mugs that are all old school National League teams, and I have the San Diego Friars logo on one of them as a part of it. I love throwback things, especially, obviously, I'm a baseball girl. I miss like the pencil drawing American League and National League logos so much. Like I crave that. I crave that stuff. But how you been? How are you?
Good. I figured, you know, it's been a good time to come back. As I listened to Ryan's fever. Wow.
Oh, find a very loud here.
Was it really that loud?
Was that the sound of you voting for Kate for Podcast Movement 2026?
I've already voted.
Vote on all of your emails and all I of did. Your Facebooks.
I'm not voting on all my Facebooks. I only got one of those, but you got all my emails.
I appreciate that. Sincerely, nope. I do. Holy clicky keyboard says pieces. Greg Cherry's in the chat. He's been advocating for me. Tim McFowell in the chat advocating for eating bugs, but Matt Reichel hanging out with us, Taylor Cannon hanging out with us. We always have a great crew on Wednesday nights. But Ryan, other than an aggressive typer, how are you doing?
Hold on, I want to test something. Can you hear me typing now?
Oh yeah.
Oh, yes. Something changed then, because again, I just FYI, I almost was late for the show, but you were later than I was.
AEW was later than everyone.
Because I had to update my microphone for some reason, and I did not think it would leak. Like, whatever the update is now letting you hear things.
There's probably, like, most mics have a thing where you can have settings of where it picks up, like, directionally.
Oh, and so, what about now? Still hearing it?
Still hearing it, but not nearly as aggressively.
I'm hitting buttons.
Invention is hearing response.
I'm hitting buttons, he says.
I don't know. Jesus.
Other than running behind almost, how are you?
I'm fine. Now I'm frustrated with that, but that is what it is. But I also know how I can get your guys' attention if, you know, if you guys are ignoring me, I'll just start typing.
Hey, it's better than singing, so we'll take it.
But it's been a good week as a Philly fan.
Okay. Mm.
We got Jaylen Brown. We made a hell of an offer sheet to Carlson from the Ducks, which probably won't work out, but I'm just glad my GM tried something. It's a good week for me.
I didn't realize how many Philly sports franchises you owned, the way you're saying we did these things and my GMs and all these things.
For the Flyers, I'm a season ticket holder, so my money has funded something there.
Fair enough. I appreciate that.
And I was a partial season ticket holder for the Sixers for a bunch of years, so I'm going to take the wheeze on that.
All right. I am a huge hypocrite. I use the collective we always, all the time, constantly. So... that's why I call it out in other people, because I see it in myself first.
My money has funded, even if it's just a towel, my money has funded something.
Don't forget and to bring a towel.
Tally, you're the worst.
Wanna get high. Let's dive in tonight, because Lord Kev says, I am positively moist from that main event.
Yeah, let's start with that.
Of course, being back with all of you, thank you so much. My man crush, Kenny, won. I am very excited to talk about this, because this went, it went the way I was expecting it to go, in a different way. I thought Hanger was for sure going to show up. Perhaps that is something that is quote-unquote redemption-coded, but this main event was fantastic. I could sit here and call out spots all day, but we... Tonight was loaded, so I'm not going to go into as much detail as I normally do, but the biggest thing here is Will Ospreay comes to take the diamond ring from Maxwell before he's able to lay it in on Kenny. And Kenny has the title belt, but he won't hit MJF. And MJF low blows him while Bryce is still yapping to Will Ospreay about the ring situation. But MJF hits him with the belt, and Kenny kicks out at one. It kind of does, you know, the Hulk up, the Bryan Danielson shaking his hair thing. Like, whatever that is for Kenny Omega, that's what he does here. We get some strikes traded, but Kenny with three V-triggers and a one-winged angel. To beat MJF, I'm going to say relatively clean, because even the dirty spots are things that MJF got the upper hand with. Like, Will took his diamond ring, and he's going to have some complaints about that. But, like, he got a belt shot in when that happened. So, to me, this is a pretty clean way to do it, while also giving MJF something to whine about. Like, I think that's a really, really, really good execution. They've gotten a lot better, and I don't know if this is just better match agenting or if MJF has just took his foot off the gas with, like, so many of his matches having so much goofy shit engineered into him. Like... he's wrestled a lot more than he has in the past this run, this whole year, really. And a lot of them are just, like, cleaner, better matches. And I like that, because he's a really good fucking wrestler. Like, I know he's a chicken shit heel, but we don't have to go so far out of our way to remind you every single time. I thought this was great. Every time these guys lock up, they have unbelievable chemistry. There's so many spots in here to call out. But much like their other matchups... it's kind of one of those, you just got to go watch the whole thing unfold. To me, like, just go watch the match unfold, because I thought this was fantastic. All three matches that they've had have felt so different. I also think it's really cool that now twice MJF has dropped his title on free television. Like, I am so pushing for more exciting shit to happen on week-to-week television, and I'm also intrigued what this does to Redemption. I don't know if MJF worms his way into the main event at Wembley because he has a leg to stand on now. Like, I feel like they left a lot of intrigue to this, and I really, really like it. So kudos to MJF right now, to me, is Wrestler of the Year. There's some seconds in there. I'm having a lot of fun with Andrade this year. I loved what we were getting from Ciampa before this Chris Jericho shit. But I thought this main event felt like a really big main event. It really, really helped. Everyone was saying, like, this is one of those Dynamite episodes that feels like a pay-per-view. This was the cherry on top of that for sure. I'll throw it to Joe first. What are your thoughts on both the outcome and the match that we got?
I'm with you on the match. It's hard to kind of describe other than, you know, having to just watch it back. I'm trying out how I feel about it compared to the previous one they had. But the outcome, I think that is the right outcome, obviously, with Kenny winning. I'm intrigued by kind of the follow-up of, one, where does MJF kind of fit into this? Does he, like you said, does he weasel his way back into three-way match? Does he, you know, position himself somehow that way? Does Will leverage the whole I helped you out by, you know, taking the ring off MJF? And does Kenny have issue with that? And then the idea that, you know, MJF loses again on TV, but it's taking three V-triggers. Like, it took three coffin drops. I think it helps make him that much of a respectful champion, even though he is that chicken shit hill we talked about. So I like that part. And I'm with you. I like the idea of having major title changes on television, even though we also got one the same week at the other company.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny that you bring that up because I obviously cover a lot of this shit. And there's been kind of, I think, an overwhelming feeling that neither company, like, I think a lot of people feel like AEW has been doing better than WWE. But I think a lot of people have felt like overall things have just been pretty good. There hasn't been some overwhelming angle to sink your teeth into. I think that happens around Forbidden Door season, quite frankly, all the time. Like, that's always the complaint around Forbidden Door. And I think this is a good way to spice things up. And I, you know, now marks when it's crucial. Now going into Wembley is when this really kind of matters. Ryan, I want your thoughts. And I'm also intrigued. Like, I really feel like Hangman's got to be loitering. Like, he's just been gone. MJF has now lost his title. I feel like maybe Redemption is, can I stand in MJF's way? Like, Is there a version of Hangman that comes back and says, I'm a man of my word, I said I'm not going to challenge for the title, so I'm not gonna, but I'll be damned if that guy gets his way back to it. I think could be a really, really cool story. Maybe that comes into play at Redemption. Maybe we get Hangman back in the fold and it's a four-way. Who the hell knows? But just the name of the Redemption pay-per-view feels like it's begging for a Hangman return. I thought he was going to be there tonight. I liked Will being the one to come down and take the ring off. How did you feel about all of this, and how are you feeling about the way this might shape up at Wembley?
So, first of all, I know for a fact when you say people are talking about that AEW is better than WWE, but not, you know, not that great right now. I know by people you mean yourself, because I have listened to your other shows where you have said that direct quote. So, if you're going to call me out for saying we,
saying it,
if you're going to call me out for saying we,
there's been a lot of people, self included, honestly, that like Brian Alvarez is saying it. It's not just me saying it, but we've like quite consistently from a lot of fans, we've heard just like, there's just not like a sink your teeth into it angle on any show on all of weekly episodic television.
Oh, I agree. But since you called me out for we, I'm getting you back.
Oh, I use the collective we horrendously. Like, I call you out on it. I'm a complete hypocrite. If the Yankees are bad, we're doing a bad job. Like, I'm a huge hypocrite for it. Yeah.
But So this was pretty much a clean win for Omega. It does give him the it does give MJF the angry at Ospreay, though. If you look at it, all Ospreay did was prevent MJF from cheating. He didn't actually do anything to MJF. I loved the win. See, this is where it gets weird, because I think Ospreay versus Omega at Wembley is a much bigger stage, much bigger match, much bigger stage. I think that's the one people want. I think that's the one Ospreay wants. I think I like your Hangman story because you could get MJF and Hangman at Wembley. That's, I know we've seen it, but people will love it anyway, as like another, like you said, this is the match to undo the stipulation to get, you know, get MJF, whatever.
It's also a match that is a proven ticket mover. I will say that. Yeah. Anytime they've done that match, tickets sell. That's a very, a very big thing.
And you're going to need some big, big matches there. I think Ospreay, Omega, Hangman, MJF are the just two gigantic matches. For this, I get why Hangman couldn't come back for this match, because he would have had to have attacked MJF. He would have had to have done something to prevent him from winning. And Kenny had to win clean, because Kenny's story was, can I still do this? I'm believing in myself. And now he won, so he has every right to believe in himself. But that's why Hangman couldn't come back. The interesting thing is they built a hell of an Ospreay MJF story. So yes, you can't just throw that by the wayside. That's where I'm wondering, there's a pay-per-view in between the two. If you have an Ospreay MJF match there, and that's where the Hangman thing comes into play of MJF tries some shenanigans and Hangman takes care of it. The match itself is obviously incredible. It had just the right amount of shenanigans.
They didn't overtake the match. I really like that.
They let those two who are incredible wrestlers just wrestle. And like Joe said, the amount of punishment MJF had to take to be beaten, I think, is a real plus to MJF. The kick out for Omega when he did get low blowed and all that with the... No, not that. That's the one count. Sorry, I'm going back to the earlier kick out where he threw both his arms up.
Oh, so good. Yeah, that was almost a 2999.
The style of it. I don't think I've ever seen a kick out like that before, where the guy just throws his body up.
Yeah. Only other person I've seen is Kenny do that. I think he did that against Okada one time. But I love that. I love that Kenny chose to use it here, because this match would mean if he lost it, he could never challenge for the title again. So kicking out with every cell in your body is like such a nice piece of storytelling. I'm totally with you on that, Ryan.
And unrelated to the match, but related to the match, has Taz fully gone over to heel commentator again?
It certainly feels that way, and it's not my favorite. It's a little heavy-handed on the, what was Will Ospreay doing? Like, stop. You can lean that way, but going so full tilt was not idea for me.
He made me laugh earlier in the night where he was like, when he's like, Okada's my friend, but when it came to the Ospreay stopping MJF, I'm like, this is too, like you said, over the top. It didn't feel natural. That just didn't make sense to me. But they have set themselves up for an interesting story in many ways. Actually, both their title pictures are now very interesting, because there's three people hovering around the title that you can't, I don't think they're going to do triple threats at Wembley. And I'm like, you definitely couldn't do two of them. So you'd have to decide which title got it. But I mean, when we talked about the women's, you now have three there. Cause I'm sorry, I will go to talk about it later, but I don't think Willow can be a one-off, but here, you've built a great Ospreay MJF feud, but you can't give people the idea that it's Omega and Ospreay at Wembley and then not do it.
Yeah, I don't think there's a chance that it's not Omega Ospreay. I just wonder if MJF sneaks in there. My gut inclination is that it doesn't, because I just feel like Max is such a good storyteller that having him title adjacent is fine, and he held the title really successfully twice this year already. I don't think you need him there. He's proven to be someone that when he has the title, ratings are higher. He's proven that. So they might want to do that because he's genuinely a needle mover, if not a needle retainer. But for England, like, this is Will Ospreay's moment, and you have him and Kenny having had an insane match in Japan, an insane match in Canada, for Will Ospreay to win the title one-on-one against Kenny Omega in his hometown. Like, that, I feel, to me, that feels like the way to do it. And now part of that is because I want there to be a triple threat for the women's title. Like, I feel like Tekla's done such a good job, and Mercedes has her Owen Hart shot, and Willow just won this casino gauntlet. So, like, if you're going to do a triple threat, I would prefer it be the women's one. But I think there's something to Max fighting Andrade, a returning Hangar, Swerve, someone else. Like, I think that's, yeah, that doubles your marquee value by not having him in there as a triple threat.
Also, honestly, you haven't had an Omega, I just Googled, you haven't had an Omega Osprey one-on-one match since June of 2023. So this isn't an overplayed, I mean, these two are two great rivals, but they haven't wrestled in a singles match in 3 years. Like, this would be...
Since Will signed, I don't think. He was still with New Japan.
Oh, no, we lost Joe.
We said Joe is having some power issues. There's some thunderstorms rolling through.
But to
your point, like, we have not gone to that well too many times, and the match at Forbidden Door was one of the most incredible matches you'll ever see.
I think even a triple threat would be a letdown from the promise of these two on such a huge stage in Ospreay's home country for the title. Yeah, I just think you let those two do their things. And like you said, MJF, Hangman, there's other people. There's Hangman, there's Kevin Knight, there's Andrade.
Sure.
There's other matches that MJF can walk into, all the while Ospreay is there once he re-wins the title. Not re-wins, once he wins the title.
I'm very hung up on this Hangman thing because it feels like such a solution of course MJF's going to want to get his title back immediately, and of course Hangman would want to stand in the way of that as much as humanly possible. Like, I really, really would love to see that, and I never get mad when MJF puts on his working boots. Like, there's few that I want to see as a heel more, and there's few faces that are better at delivering in the ring than Hangman. Like, I just never get sick of seeing them lock up. So
yeah, I'm with you. I think that's the matches I would go with. And you have Ospreay versus Omega headline the pay-per-view. I mean, it has to headline just because it's Ospreay's home country. Like, there's no other way to do it. But
we did get a promo earlier in this episode kind of teasing a face-off with MJF and Ospreay there. And the most notable thing about this to me was the fact that Will Ospreay was in his tights, but also a polo shirt. And to me, I say that is the most Will Ospreay thing I've ever seen. I don't know if there's a more English wrestler look than polo shirt and my wrestling tights on already. This was kind of standard fare, and it kind of justifies what happens later in the night a little bit. But that does make me think that MJF and Will Ospreay aren't done. I don't know if that carries itself all the way to Wembley. That could be a redemption thing. So we will see. We will see. But we've kind of been talking about this other title picture. We've got the women's title picture, and we get a women's casino gauntlet, which brings back a returning Willow Nightingale, who wins this. She is the last entrant, which I get it for wrestling. That always seems a little cheesy to have the last entrant win it. The other aspect of this that's kind of a good storyline is Athena and Maya Worlds. In the beginning of this, the number one and two spots, Athena makes a great TV wrestling stink face when Willow returns, because Willow and her have had some incredible battles in ROH. I think they had one on the main roster as well, but those two are fantastic foes to each other. And
they're coming to get you. Whoa, it's the sound of the police.
Sorry, the police know I'm trying to stuff the ballot box for Podcast Movement 2026. Handcuff me and take me away.
It's the sound of the police.
Other than that, we've got Rena from Stardom in this. But we have Thunder Rosa, who, by the way, I think looked better than she's looked in a long time on the pay-per-view pre-show. We haven't really even gotten to talk about the pay-per-view. But her tag match with Olympia, I felt like I was like, wow, Rosa looks like the Rosa of old that we know. But this was all about Willow. She pins Julia Hart in this. Her and Sky Blue were the other entrants as well. This was not that much of a surprise. My thing was, man, why did you just not, like, they should have just not run the Willow vignettes. If we didn't know she was returning, that would have solved the TBS title timing. And if we didn't know how short-term her injury was, this would have been a huge surprise. So that's my only thing with it. I'm so glad she's back. I like her winning. I think the possibility of her and Mercedes taking their feud to the biggest title in the company for the women's side of things is fantastic. But I'm just like, if they just didn't run the vignettes, everybody would have been surprised. And also the timing with the TBS title would have been a lot less weird because Sheeta would have just been crowned champion and Willow would have returned to move on. Other than that, I thought it was great. Welcome back, Willow. Certainly a shot in the arm to the women's division, who we were for a short time there without Toni Storm, Willow, and Mercedes. We now have two-thirds back. The other third won't be back for a very long time. So good to have the star power of a Willow Nightingale. Ryan, your thoughts?
Welcome back to the ring where you last wrestled. Welcome back. No, I mean, you're right. The vignettes kind of ruined the surprise, which sucks because it was even a big pop, even with the surprise, with the ruined surprise. But it would have been huge if people were like, wait a minute, what? And yeah, I get, clearly they changed their mind on, not even changed their mind. I don't even, they leveraged an injury, in my opinion. Hey, someone gets hurt. Who knows how long she'll be out, but it gets her out of a picture. We don't want her in anymore, into something else. But this is where I was saying you can't have, so the match itself was fine. Let me take it to you. The match itself was fine. Tekla was amazing on commentary. We can get to that in a second.
Hysterical. From the John Moxley school of just saying unhinged shit on commentary. She was
all crying over the place too. From she called Mina a blow up doll that she would just motorboat the whole time to other. Honestly, she said at one point to Tony Schiavone, "You want my drink? You'll put hair on your chest." And part of me thinks that might be legitimate based on the way she's talking. Like, I know she wasn't, but it had that cadence to it that she was very good at it. The accent helps because it just has her sound a little different. But anyway, have this fun match, but she comes back and wins in this huge fashion. And Tekla's at the commentary, and Mercedes is on the lifeguard stand, which was genius, by the way. Genius use of the lifeguard stand. And I want to establish that I love when they do sets like this. I think these are my favorite things.
Venues with personalities are so much fun, and then when they just go full tilt with a theme like this, it's a blast. Like, look, it really adds so much. We'll talk about the opening match, but like, from the beginning, they're using the set as a part of these matches, and it just makes it more fun. And you had the right veterans there to do it tonight, I felt like, too. So, yeah, I'm totally with you on that.
Used to be my favorite thing that WWE did, WCW did. Their pay-per-views would have, like, sets. And now it's they're all mostly, even both companies, for the most part, they're just standard.
They're all screens because they're easy to travel with and they look good for social media. I get it. But I am not a minimalist. I'm a maximalist. I like stuff.
Put a bunch of
stuff on your stage.
So I thought this looked great. But you have this amazing match. And I think all the women really showed out. You had your moments with Athena needs to lose ROH, be full-time AEW, but that's a whole different discussion. Athena looked great. You had the Triangle of Madness where Tekla doing a very fun job of being like, I don't care if they win, we'll just fight. Maya World continuing to be part of the story now. Rena, and then I think Thunder Rose is finally looking like she's got her feet back under her post those injuries.
It's good to see. It's really good to see.
But you don't have Willow come in, win on this big return for a title shot with Mercedes, who has a title shot over here, and Tekla over there, and be like, well, Willow's just going to be a one-off and lose. It just doesn't feel right. Willow has to be involved. But so does Mercedes, and so does Tekla. So this is where I was saying you're getting the feel of a triple threat for the other main, for the women's main event of Wembley, because it just, I can't see a world where these three don't belong in a ring together.
Yeah.
Mainly because, listen, the big match is Mercedes versus Willow. I mean, that's going to be awesome. But Tekla is the champ, and I don't want Tekla to lose her belt on a stopgap pay-per-view before the big one. So
I did see a really interesting idea that I don't think is happening because I don't think the timing works out. And my hope is that they don't screw over Tekla with this. But the idea that somebody from Stardom would cost Tekla on the way to this. Like, she's facing Willow at Redemption and someone from Stardom, and they were like, what if it was Kyrie? And I was like, that would be fucking cool. Like, if Kyrie representing Stardom after all the shit Tekla's done to Stardom and comes back as, like, the representative, that's a cool title adjacent feud that would justify that move. I'm still voting for the triple threat because I feel like Tekla's done so much great work with this title.
It only works if it's Kyrie because she's got the name to like come in and say like to have a Stardom wrestler cost Tekla a title who's not Kyrie. God bless. AEW fans are more tuned in, because that's just like the relationship has tuned people into those things. Mm-hmm. But most of them are still going to be like, who are you? Versus if it's Kyrie, everyone's going to know who she is. That's a big thing. But like you said, Tekla, I think Tekla deserves to be on that stage, but Willow versus Mercedes is the moment. So it's a good problem to have.
Sure.
Because it's,
embarrassment of riches, 100%.
Yes, yes, exactly. Listen, if they went Mercedes, Tekla, and Willow was a weird one-off, I'd be like, that sucks, but I'm still loving this match. If they go Mercedes versus Willow and Tekla lose, I'm like, that really sucks for Tekla, but I'm loving this match. If they went Tekla versus Willow, I'd be like, I love this match. Yeah. There's no way I get so.
There's not a wrong call in this. Yeah, there's just a might be better call for sure.
Yeah.
And, like, not for nothing, AEW seems like they're trying to reward the right performers for having a great attitude about things, and I think Tekla very much fits into that. So we'll see. We will see what happens, but thank you to everybody who is chatting along with us. One LT photo in the chat. Thank you to everybody who voted for me. Hi to Kylie. Do we have anybody that we need to... Not yet.
Jesse's not here yet. We have Greg Cherry, 1LT, Pieces, Matt Reichiel, Scott George, Big G, Tim McFall.
We got a good
crowd. Or Kev. Taylor Cannon
waiting
was...
waiting on the one guy to piss you off, that's all.
Yeah. Did you know AJ Styles' son wrestles?
I did. That's a pretty recent thing that, at least as far as, like, being public-facing, that's...
Because he's apparently going to be wrestling at GCW, so I just happened to see that.
And before the tapings tonight, Steve Borden was wrestling. He was in tag action, too.
How old is he?
Wrestling sons. That's an excellent question.
I can hear you typing.
Yeah, well, I'm on my headset mic, so it picks up all the street noise and...
Why are you on your headset mic?
My typing... I have a missing cable that is supposed to get sent to me that I lost in the move or, like, got lost in... He's 34, according to UK.
So he's DDPing it.
He might be DDPing it. I also know how accurate the internet is, but he...
But also, wrestling's weird. You could be 34 and start. Like, it's not like...
Yeah, especially if you're a Nepo baby.
People really hate on the Nepo babies, but I wish I was a Nepo baby.
Oh, not at all. I'm mad my dad's not a billionaire. Are you kidding?
God, that would be awesome.
Or even a millionaire.
Ugh. Yeah, that'd be...
All day. I don't need to work. I don't need to be a strong, independent woman. How dare my dad?
1LT's 41 starting. I'm 39 and not starting, I can tell you that.
I was going to say, I actually, someone, I was approached about, like, doing managerial stuff, and I was like, I just want you to know, I'm 30 and I'm 39 and I've never taken a bump in my life and I don't intend to. So there is that.
Is it weird? No, not a headshot, but I would take a back chair shot before I think I would want to take a bump.
Oh, 100%. Because if someone knows how to deliver it right, it's going to hurt because it's a chair shot. But if someone's getting the surface area right, that's way better than taking a bump. 100%.
I just think me falling is going to hurt so bad.
I agree. Gravity is not our friend at this age.
No, it is not.
We do have a couple of non-match things to discuss. Jungle Boy has re-signed. We also didn't talk about this at the top of the show because I kind of wanted to weave it in. Sheamus is departing WWE. This one caught AEW off guard from what I understand and from what was reported by Fightful Select, that he is in the crop of guys that TKO is trying to restructure their deals around. That is a disgusting practice, but of course, like, if that's their approach, Sheamus is going to be a guy that's in that. Of like, he's 49, I think. He's had some injuries. They went through their whole hot streak while he was injured, so he's not going to be used as or viewed by TKO as vital in any way. So it's unfortunate, but there's a lot. It's funny. I saw a lot of people being like, I don't know. Like, does AEW need Sheamus? No. But should they get him? Maybe. Like, I'm kind of stuck in that, too. Like, if he came in and was, like, part Death Rider and part-time, and that would be really cool. Him having a C2, I think, would be fucking sick. But I also, like, it's the utilization of a lot of these guys. If he's used, like, a Kyle O'Reilly, Roddy Strong, like how we're seeing. I actually think Claudio should be used better, in my opinion. I don't have a problem with that, but like that is going to cost you some money. I think he would be very open to the much lighter workload that would entail. I think that's a big part of it with a lot of these guys. I'm not at all surprised that Jack Perry resigned with AEW. I think anybody that thought he was going elsewhere was, in some sense, kidding. But I'm curious to see what you think about Sheamus, because there's a lot of people that were like, no offense to him, but he's like 49 and it's a very full roster and we don't want it to become a WWE dumping ground. Joe, you're just in time to talk about Jack Perry re-signing and also the possibility of Sheamus coming to AEW. There's been kind of like a mixed reaction on that. I'll throw to Ryan first so that you can get your bearings with your thunderstorms and your internet again.
So one, Jack Perry, you said that always, I couldn't see him going elsewhere. One, the person he had a big feud with happens to be the champ at the other company. I know they could still make that work, but you can't tell me that's not a part of a decision. The girl he says he fell in love with happens to work at AEW. Plus his style and who he is. What, Kate? You're just making faces over.
I was muted. Sorry. Just like even like what you were just saying, like stylistically in the ring. Like, I feel like Jack Perry just makes a lot more sense in AEW for sure.
Yeah. So he does, like, he's not a big mic guy. He's a wrestler, and that's AEW over WWE. That's not a negative towards either. That's just where strength comes into play. Sheamus is interesting. So I'm with you on wish they use Claudio more, though. I guess with that split contract he has with CMLL, they're having some fun with that. He's probably really enjoying himself. So there's something fun there. But Sheamus is interesting because the age is a factor, but we're just talking about it. In wrestling, it's weird nowadays. As long as you can still go, who cares what your age is? This isn't actual sports where, like, if you're not quite as fast, all of a sudden you can't perform. Like, you know, as long as it still looks okay, you're fine. That being said, and he's had some good matches at WWE, some really, really good ones, but I just don't know where he fits. I guess that's the
A lot of people are saying throw him in the Death Riders to reunite the bar, like to have Claudio and Sheamus, because that was such a fun tag team. And that tag team, there's like nostalgia runs, but that was like a specific moment in time that could be really fun to bring back under the umbrella of the Death Riders. Like that's kind of a cool idea. We should have gotten Joe's thoughts first because his internet cut out once again. I think he just doesn't like hearing you talk because both times it happened.
I don't blame him. I suck, but...
Yeah. I wish I could too, you know what I mean? But then the whole stream goes dead, so... we will shame Joe from running for the grind next week. Hopefully he'll be able to join. But we will get his thoughts on that at a different time and place. But I've got some thoughts on Kyle Fletcher becoming your new international champion. I feel like perhaps Takeshita might be in the play-in match for the G1. I think those haven't happened yet. I am actually woefully behind on my New Japan at the moment. I didn't get to watch the presser today, which is like my favorite part. I don't think the play-in matches have happened. But I think that's probably why Takeshita loses this. Perhaps not. Perhaps this is just them strapping up Kyle Fletcher to continue this dissension. I don't think strapping up Kyle Fletcher is a bad thing at all. This match was, as anticipated, fucking great and crazy and great. And oh my god, every time that Kyle Fletcher does that brain buster into the turnbuckle, I am scared somebody is going to die. It's never happened, so I'm not concerned, like, for real. But in the moment I am, this match was great. These two have unbelievable chemistry. My thing is, like, Takeshita's contracted to three companies, and none of the three of them can seem how to figure out how to put him on a consistent track. I feel like this could be a hot potato situation. This is part of the issue of having too many titles, in my opinion, is it just feels like yet another title that's in this Don Callis fluidity, whatever. Him having a title, Kevin Knight having a title, kind of makes sense. They're not going to get the tag titles right now because those are obviously headed to Wembley in some sort of amalgamation of a ladder match, I think. I feel like this is let's bolster up the Don Callis family. But I was like, man, I don't know if I've ever been so excited and disappointed by the same decision. I was like, oh, man, that's kind of a bummer for Takeshita. But I love the idea of putting money right back on Kyle Fletcher. Like, that dude is too good to not be immediately seeking gold. It does kind of make us wonder, like, why he didn't face Kevin Knight for the title that he had had. But maybe they're trying to avoid that. I don't know. This was an insane match. There was a lot of incredible in-ring between this and the main event tonight. I had a bunch of fun watching this. Ryan, over to you.
So I think you're right on the G1. Jeremy said that on In the Weeds one day.
Okay.
That was his guess, is that they're going to have him lose. He even referenced that Nick Wayne last year was able to go with the ROH TV title, but they took that away from him this year.
Sorry.
Did you just make a note?
My phone did. I just am trying to chastise Joe.
I thought I was haunted. I was like, what the hell is that sound?
Oh, I should have said that you were haunted. I should have.
But
just let that be true.
But I do think he I do think he's probably going to compete, and they just didn't want him to have a title. The way they now made Nick Wayne lose his title to compete in Super Juniors, so that it keeps everything. That makes more sense.
There's 9 trillion belts is the thing. Like, it's not like people would be like, oh, this belt is missing. Like, who gives a shit?
I don't think it's missing so much as who's going to lose or not win. And it's like, we're having a guy who holds one of our titles lose on your programming, which isn't the end of the world. But I can also say, like, you're not going to be on our TV for a while. You're going to be losing on someone else's TV. Let's just take the title off you. No harm, no foul. And it gives, you know, Kyle Fletcher something to do. It interestingly enough, put a little tension between Kevin Knight and Kyle Fletcher. I really don't think Kevin Knight's long for the Don Callis family. I think they're already setting that up.
I hope so. Get out of here. Like, it was such a bad idea from the start.
Yes.
I feel like it's cooler from a play-in standpoint when you're coming back from America to have the title. I think you carrying credibility is cool. Like, but I also get it. I just am like, let there be breathing room in your product. We don't need to be like, all the titles have to be here all the time. It's a very easy thing to hot potato, though, because I think Kyle Fletcher and Takeshita are probably going to have, like, a lot of back and forth. That makes me feel better, because Jeremy would know. He writes all the articles, so he would know if the playoff matches hadn't happened. Scott George saying Oiwa had a banger with ELP to get into the G1. I think ELP might be headed out of the company, guys.
He's losing a lot.
Toward America. He's losing a lot. He's not in the G1. He's very suspicious, especially he had an amazing G1 last year. He was, to me, like, obviously, like, I liked his matches with Zach, but those were some of the best matches of the G1 period. And I felt like he had a breakout performance in that tournament. So him not being in there is sus, as the kids say. I think Takeshita gets his title back. I think we get him and his ex-boyfriend, lover, fighting for a while here. But we Sweet. Do have Andrade coming out.
Hold on. I want to talk Andrade. I do want to talk Andrade. But hold on. Before we get into that, I'm going to forget. Where do you think ELP goes? If you bring it up, I got to know.
I would guess he's AEW bound. I don't know where he fits in AEW, probably the Don Callis family. But I think the fact that he looks like Logan Paul and isn't Logan Paul, WWE looks down upon. Even though I think he does it as a troll. I also just think, like, there's so much healthy movement, despite what some people will pretend, around the fact that we have this dual contract world. And I think working Japan has been important to ELP. I also think making money, especially, people forget he had cancer and recovered. So my guess is, like, he might want to make his money while he can. I think that's a super reasonable thing. I could also see him, like, doing CMLL work too. Like, he would be a great fit for there. He's a Best of Super Juniors winner about 7 years ago, I think. So I think the outside the WWE ecosystem, the world is probably his oyster a little bit. I genuinely, at this point, to be honest, and this isn't just because, like, I'm a Zach girl, because I don't judge anybody for this, I don't know if anybody other than Zach is like, no, I'm going to stay here, other than, like, Tsuji or maybe some of, like, the Japanese young boys and whatever, like, that are coming up through that system. But, like, yeah, ELP's 39, too. He just looks super young. So, like, you got to make your money while you can in this business. But I don't think there's, like, New Japan lifers anymore. I think the financial situation is just too dire. I'm hoping the new ownership helps that. But, like, I don't know. If Okada leaves, there isn't anything possible. Like, I think Zach just doesn't give a fuck about money. Otherwise, he'd be signing up for a dual contract, because I think the money is just really fucking bad in Japan right now. So
you come over here, not only if it's AEW, how many indies you can work and stuff, that at least
100%. Yeah. There's like Noah and DDT and stuff, and they're all on good terms now, but it's like ELP worked like 6 indies in 4 days or something. Like, it was nuts. So, I only have wonderful things to say about, like, A, the things that I've heard about him as a person, and B, his work ethic. I only recently found out there's, like, ELP haters, and I don't get it, but I guess everybody has haters, so.
Yeah,
you know who doesn't have a lot of haters, though? Mick Foley. He's got dogs on his shoes and a dumb outfit, but a Mick Foley outfit, so we love it. I think it was Lyric who said this episode felt like a Ted Turner tribute episode unofficially. And she was like, complimentary. And I was like, oh, it really does. Like, this felt like a Ted Turner episode, between the set design, between the way it was loaded up. I was like, you know what? That is a really good point. And Mick Foley being back on TBS was kind of a nice nod to that. But he's out here after the match, and he and Don Callis exchange some words there, and he says he's got his dogs on his shoes that are painted. He has these custom shoes. His dog who passed is on one. His dog who's still with us is on the other. And he's going to shove it up Don Callis' ass. We have a whole bunch of Callis family chaos here. And this all culminates with Andrade coming out, asking a very important question, Ryan. How you know? I genuinely love this so much because I feel like Andrade never gets to be a face. And he's definitely not a catchphrase guy face. And it feels like he's trying to hide his smirk of, like, how excited he is that the crowd is like, how you know? How you know? Like, because Andrade never gets to be a face and catchphrase guy. So I don't know. I feel like we're always seeing him like kind of hide how excited he is about the fact that like the crowd is just so connected to him right now, which is a whole bunch of fun. Don Callis' family chases him up the ramp, but Darby Allin comes in for the save. Brian Cage gets involved in all of this. This is kind of centering around Kevin Knight. This is as expected, but all very logical and good. And I just am very happy that Andrade is coming out of this a face who's still mega over, because I think he's been doing great work this year. Your thoughts on all of this, Ryan?
I didn't understand, as much as I was okay with it, I didn't quite understand where Mick Foley came into this whole thing. Like, I get he was just pretty much acting the role of interviewer, like the Renee role that then led to it, but it just felt like weird. The first use of him as an interviewer, so I guess I just got to get used to it, and that's okay.
It felt like an excuse to get him back on TBS, honestly, to me. Like, this was such, like, a lyric it's had, like, such a Turner-coded thing that I felt like they shoehorned him onto TBS.
I do think he'd be fun, not as a full-time manager, but as, like, a consultant for wrestlers, of, like, you see him do interview vignettes with wrestlers trying to help them. Like, I think that's where he'd thrive. I love Andrade. He's just on one right now. Oh, you know, I obviously knew there was something going to happen
it
when
was
he
was 103 degrees. And this motherfucker comes out in the most Peaky Blinders ass outfit that you will ever see. The amount of layers this guy had on, and he's from Mexico. So maybe this was not like blistering heat to him, but like, I was in stitches about the fact that this guy had like a vest and a coat and a newsboy cap on still.
I don't want to say this. One, I didn't realize it was that hot, but dear God, I would have melted. I was outside the other day and I wasn't dressed like that and I was ready to pass out.
Bro, Justin Roberts was like, this next match is scheduled for one.
Yeah.
He was so sweaty. I was like, get this man a water and a towel. Like,
yeah, poor Justin. But the minute Andrade ran to the back, I'm like, okay, something's happening back there. I wasn't sure I was buying into it, even with the exploding skateboard, until they turn to Andrade and they go, it was you. And he has the remote and he goes, how you know? Then I was like, all right, I'm sold. This has bought me in. He's interesting because he can be a thorn in their side alongside Darby that really, really drives them up a wall. And I think that's very fun.
It also feels like the world title picture is so wrapped up right now that the fact that he just turned on the stable is good because it gives him something title adjacent to do. And there's so many other titles in the Don Callis family. He can kind of go after them.
Yeah. But they are going to have to, how do I want to say this? They're going to have to find ways to keep him from getting beat up regularly in order to keep his cool. And that is the downside of the Don Callis family. There's so many of them that in theory, anytime they go at it with the baby face, they should just beat him down. And that works if you're telling if you have the underdog babyface story, like a Darby works. It doesn't work for Andrade, who is cool. One attack here, one attack there works, but overall he can't keep getting attacked or it's a problem.
He is effortlessly cool. I love that he seems to really love the fact that this is all as over as it is. I did want to give a shout out to Jamie, who was in the chat, who said that the dropouts have zero haters, which is a nice nod. I see your spelling there, Jamie. Shout out to Wrestle Radio Australia for noting that the dropouts said that they were stepping away from the Australian wrestling scene and that the Tuckman was vacating his soul of PWA title. Phenomenal story with Robbie Eagles. Fightful Select broke the news earlier that they are expected to go to NXT, which I don't think is a surprise, but they had a WWE tryout the same like time period. They did an ROH Collision taping, I think. They're phenomenal, and boy, does WWE need the help, and boy, does NXT specifically need the baby faces that they can be. They're insanely over, so... Aussie wrestling scene clearing once again. The Robbie Eagles learning tree never lets us down. But let's keep talking about this episode. Please leave a thumbs up on this video. Please subscribe to this YouTube channel if you haven't already. Please vote for me if you haven't already for Podcast Movement. Jamie was one of my earliest voters, calling him out in the chat before. Thank you so much. So I appreciate that. But... good stuff there. You know, we talked about the Women's Casino Gauntlet. We forgot to mention that there was an alignment between Mercedes Moné and the Divine Dominion, which I guess means we really shelved Camille super hard. Unless this is the way to bring her back into the fold, but...
She came back and then is gone again?
And then is gone again. Yeah, very mixed reactions. I think she had one other match and it didn't go great, so I don't know what the deal is with her, but Mercedes with the Divine Dominion... that seems to be in place to combat Tekla, obviously, and the ladies behind her, Miss Sky Blue and Julia Hart, which I think implies that it's got to be Willow and the Brawling Birds, right? I think that has to be where we're headed for this. So that, I think, is a really cool alignment because Lena Cross, since stepping in for... I feel bad for Penelope Ford. I don't know whatever happened with that, but, like, boy, speaking of the Australian wrestling scene, like, Lena stepped into this on very short notice and has crushed it. She's great in the ring. She has walked into the persona really beautifully alongside Megan Bain. And then backing up Mercedes is such a cool and nasty idea, I feel like. And the way that they set up the shot, I thought was awesome. To have them just, like, kind of right in back of her being so poised. Really cool stuff, and I think... The name of the game seems to be, like, how do we keep the Brawling Birds away from the Divine Dominion until Wembley? Like, it feels like that's a very obvious path that we're headed down. And setting up this little, like, trios around the three women that are spearheading the world title picture, I think is a great call. Like, I didn't even think about that. And I think that's a really cool way to go about it. So I'm here for Moné Inc., Ryan. Any thoughts on that alignment? I forgot to mention it earlier.
So, I have a few thoughts. You were right on the way Lena Cross has just stepped in and made it work. And truthfully, I think they're in a better, both of them, Mega Man and Lena Cross, are in a better position than they would have otherwise been because they get to portray a dominant team and stay more focused. They might have got lost in the shuffle otherwise because AEW is not the greatest about rotating their women around. That being said... I'm curious to see what this relationship with Mercedes is. Is this the forming of a new faction? Is this a business deal? How do they present it? Are they presenting it as this is her new group, or is this a one-off business deal? I think probably one-off business deal, but it's still, that's a good time. There, you can't tell me that it's not on purpose that they have the Divine Dominion show up, do their stuff on the Triangle of Madness, and then the same night they have that vignette for the Brawling Birds. Like, that's like, that is just too shoving that in a good way.
Yes.
Putting that in your face. Before. Yes.
Yeah.
I do love though that I'm a big fan of when heels don't get along because you're not supposed to. Because you're not good people. So I love that the Divine Dominion attacks the Triangle of Madness, and so does Mercedes, of them being like, hey, you're not my friends either. Like,
right.
We're and all at it.
I really like it too, because like, if we found out that Mercedes paid them, I would not be surprised. Like, that seems very much in the Monet changes everything realm of possibility. I also appreciate that, like, I don't feel as though Mercedes Monet has a lot of weaknesses. She is very tiny. She came back in with, like, more muscle than she's ever had. She is a tiny gal. And I love that she, as a performer, does not seem to think she's impervious to the fact that she's small. Like, her whole way of working is around that very obvious thing that she's very tiny. And she has had Camille as a heater. She's now welcoming these two as heaters. Like, I really like that she, just as, like, a wrestler, is like, okay, well, maybe I need some help because I'm a really fucking small woman. Makes a lot of sense, because Willow is a bigger woman than, I mean, Tekla is obviously pint-sized as well, but she already has backup. So, like, this makes a tremendous amount of sense to me. I think it's a really, really fun thing. I think it's a really, really fun thing. But let's keep rocking and rolling. Not a ton more to talk about. We do have this Workhorseman versus Will Ospreay and Jon Moxley, a glorified squash match, which went the way you would kind of expect it to. Will has, I feel like, done a just fantastic job about having this mistrust. I guess it was 8 minutes and 30 seconds. That's not too short. That's good.
Yeah, I didn't think it was a squashy. I mean, they went through a commercial break. Well, Moxley picture in picture.
Paradigm shift. That's probably why I felt like it was a squash, because I just, like, my ADHD just takes over and I don't pay attention during picture in picture unless something is happening. But 8:30 is a good amount of time, and I really like watching the Workhorsemen work, so I do like that. But I also like that we have Moxley with the Paradigm Shift and Ospreay with the Hidden Blade. Like, that's just a fun combination of moves. The two of them win. But I do feel like there's so many subtleties in the way Ospreay is carrying this angle of, like, I just do not fully trust this guy. Like, I appreciate everything that we've gone through. I hope we are brothers, but, like, I will never 100% trust this guy because of what he did to me. So there's just these subtleties in the way that he's telling the story that I think is really, really, really good. Good shit. Like, this has been a very compelling use of the Death Riders. I do want the Death Riders to advance the younger guys who are under them, because that feels like it was supposed to be the point of this faction, and I don't feel like it's doing a lot for Yuta or Garcia. So I want to see that part come to life. But while that's not the case, this has been really cool. Like, I love that they were like, we're going to round you out as a wrestler, is a cool thing to do. They were like, we can see the weapon that you can be is awesome. So good stuff here. I love watching JD Drake. I love Anthony Henry. Good stuff here on my television. What did you think?
I agree. Again, I was going to say before you called it a squash, I was surprised how not squashy this was to me, because it should have been, just based off of the way it was presented.
Yeah.
I'm glad, because JD Drake and Anthony Henry are awesome. So they deserve to not be squashed. I do like what they're doing with the Ospreay Moxley story. I like the way it's being told. It's not getting in the way of the Ospreay story directly, which I really appreciate. It's going to probably enhance the Wembley story, but there does have to be a fallout eventually, and I'm very curious on how that's going to play out.
I agree. Coming down the home stretch, we're actually about to take it to the top of the show, but before we do, the Brawling Birds are beating the shit out of some jobbers in a pub. That's just a good time. That's just a good time to be had by everyone. There seemed to be an effort around this episode of, we're not going to, in an elementary school style way, do it, but if you are new, we're going to catch you up to speed with things like this. Like, I was entertained by this vignette as someone that watches the show every week. If somebody new were watching, they'd be like, who are those girls? Let me find out about them. They did also do this big Twitch thing that had 18,000 people watching it at one point. beforehand, which is a very cool thing. They need to be doing more shit like that, especially as the alternative brand. So maybe they were hoping some of that would carry over. I'm sure that's why we opened with Jericho Ciampa too, was like familiar faces and all that kind of jazz. Even though that seems a little older than the Twitch audience. But this is always just a good time. It's been too long since we've done one of these, honestly. Jamie Hayter and Alex Windsor should just be beating people up in pubs on a weekly basis, yep. To be honest.
I got no comments. You're right. They should just constantly be beating people up in pubs.
Ryan thinks I was right.
Never mind.
Let's talk, unfortunately, about Jericho Ciampa. Except Ciampa won, so hopefully we can just move on from this. But it feels like we never get to move on from anything until Jericho wins. I will give Jericho credit. It was 100 degrees out, and that guy came out in his black velvet sparkly pants. God bless him. I liked the intent of the way this match started. I don't think it carried out in execution, but Ciampa looking up the ramp like, come on, you son of a bitch, and Jericho like hitting him from behind is always fun. The execution just took too long. But what I loved about this, and I didn't love much, I really loved this was just like, we're going to immediately use the set in as many stupid ways as possible, and it was so much fun. Ciampa using the bucket of sand, I thought was fantastic. I had so much fun with that. Three knee strikes, and Ciampa puts away Jericho here, though. The stuff on the ramp, the parts that I liked the most are when they were using the set. I thought that's always going to be my favorite part when the set is like this. So, what did you think of our opener that we're closing with tonight? Because we had a lot of eventful stuff to discuss before we took it back to the top.
I mean, I liked the match a lot. I thought it was good fun. It's a fun opener. Ciampa starting out waiting for Jericho and Jericho outsmarting him. It makes sense to me because while Ciampa's experienced, Jericho should be more experienced. Like, that is a logical step. The use of those chairs, that has to hurt. Those things, I know they're plastic, but they're all edges and they're all the sand and the bucket was really good. The aftermath with the drill, I was like, ooh, they're really trying to make Ciampa look like a psycho. And I'm like, I appreciate that. There was the one move on
how could I forget Ciampa with the fucking malicious Home Depot spot of the year? Just
he's trying to kill
him. Psycho driller.
Wow. There was the spot on the steel steps where Ciampa was looked like I thought he was gonna like pile drive him, and he literally just dropped Jericho on his face. It looked way more vicious than it had any right to look. Yeah. I was very much
I give credit to Jericho even at this stage of his career. Like, he takes some fucking bumps still. He takes some uncomfortable bumps still.
These matches still work really well for Jericho because he can hide a bit of his flaws. Like, if I were booking Jericho, one, this would be the end of the feud. Ciampa won. He got some heat. He got some heat back on him. That's what Ciampa needed. This is huge for him. Let him go on to something else. But for Jericho, anything that's non-stipulated one-on-one, have them be short. Whether he wins or loses, 10 minutes and under. Like, no long matches for him. Because he can go, and anything that's going to go longer, put a stipulation in, because then it can hide a bit of what age has hit on him. Because this was a good time.
He's definitely looked better since he's come back. Like, the match with Ricochet was good. The match we saw live was really good. Like, he's gotten a lot. I think he just needs certain opponents and certain restrictions around the way he used to wrestle, which is very reasonable in your 50s.
You also said this one time. I don't know if you said it when we saw it live or you said it elsewhere. I think sometimes the heat online for Jericho, what gets lost in that is when you go watch him wrestle a match, he works the crowd.
So much.
As well as any wrestler can possibly do. And so you, like, no matter how people feel, they react to him. He does not get indifference. And that he also at least he sometimes
usually gets the intended reaction. Like, from a live crowd standpoint, he knows exactly. This is something that I feel like Saraya was really good at. This was probably the thing she was best at. Is like just reading the crowd's cadence and knowing when to step on the gas or take it off. Like, Jericho's great at that, and he should be. He's been doing this for 30 years. But he's really, really good at architecting that stuff. And I think that's why people really like him backstage more than maybe we like him in the ring, is because I think he's very, very good at that specific aspect of it. Because when you're watching the match live, it doesn't feel like it's long or dragged out. It feels like it's tuned in to what you're looking at. I think I did make that point when we were there live, and it's true. Like, he always gets the live crowd.
And I gotta believe he seems like someone who's willing to talk to other wrestlers and work with them. So I gotta believe that having someone on your back who's like, hey, let me talk to you and show you how to work a crowd is really helpful for all those guys who are still learning that, who might need a bit of that. Like, here's a cadence that gets this done. If you're feeling them go this way, do this. Because he just seems to pick up on the momentum and know where things need to happen. Joe, someone named Asian Joe in the chat is asking how fun it was. You know what, Joe? I'm going to rate the whole night, because the whole night.
Yeah.
What's it for?
Even I would have to agree. Like, on the whole, I would say it's a 4 out of 4 funds. If it were in the Tokyo Dome, we wouldn't even be able to use those graphics.
We'd need a new fun scale.
Yeah, it would be crazy, but it was a really loaded Dynamite. I like that they also, in addition to having some great in-ring and some championship changes, like Jack resigning, Willow's return, like, it was a very well-rounded, newsworthy night too. So very, yep, very cool. And that's headed into Redemption too. We got the biggest season around the corner. I feel like AEW is in a really good groove for what they do. I'm very, very intrigued to see what happens in the men's world title picture. And especially at Redemption, we will find out. But Ryan, that's all for us tonight. I would think that Joe would have thought this was a pretty good show, but
pretty good.
He can't bear to be on screen with you anymore, unfortunately. Joe said it was a 4.2 for him. Tekla's commentary pushed it over the top. She was amazing. She was so funny.
Yep.
But Ryan, I'm here for wrestling. I'm here for wrestling most nights of the week. I'm on the internet. But you might be here for other things.
Sometimes.
You might be on the internet. You might be here for pornography. You might be here. I'm just saying. Just the general. If we can use a collective we can use a collective you. You know what I'm saying? So I'm just saying that there's a lot of uses for the internet. And one of them might be wanting to research events that happened in the past, which I'm told is the definition, perhaps, of history.
Maybe. I'm not sure if it is, but I trust you. yes, I've been saying at Here for History, at Here for History on YouTube, Twitter, wherever, or at underscore Here for History on Twitter, all those places. I have been saying I'm coming back. I'm fully intending. I'm trying to get a bunch in the can, so that I can give myself some breaks. Some real world stuff has been taking up a lot of time. That it's so that's why I'm, you know, unfortunately I have multiple things going on.
Stuff?
I was not as big of a Road Rules fan.
No, I was a real world. I'm a messy bitch. I wanted the real world stuff.
You know what? You know when Road Rules lost me?
When?
When they started eliminating people.
Fair.
That's the original Road Rules, they didn't eliminate. They just didn't have any money. So, like, they had to do these challenges to get money to, like.
Yeah. They didn't eliminate anyone either. Do you remember Eliminate?
No, but I remember Next.
Oh, my God. They were all the same. That and the Fifth Wheel, they were all the same shit.
Room Raiders.
Oh, my God. Ryan, we'll be back at some point. I'll be back at some point, too. But for now, I'm just yapping about wrestling at Fightful. Though ROH watch-alongs may be getting closer than they were previously, because we might be able to actually get permission to do that. So I'm excited about that possibility. But you can catch me on Fightful Monday nights on Select with Alex Pulowski. We don't really talk about Raw. We play Tomodachi Island now, which is a game that is meant for children, and you can, like, build your friends, but Alex made it a wrestling island, and so now I'm married to Seth Rollins on this island with a kid. I am a messy bitch there too. So, Jericho and Punk for real don't like each other on the island, which is very funny. There's also, like, because it's a very elementary game, everybody's robot voices are like, hello, so-and-so. And so, obviously, you can, like, customize greetings. So Jey Uso was like, hello, Oos. How are you, Oos? Yeet. But obviously, I had to have ZSJ in the game. And so he's just like, hello, dickhead. It's phenomenal. We have a great time. But anyway, Tuesdays, I'm reviewing NXT, doing whatever the fuck we do over there on Fightful Main Channel. Wednesdays, I'm here, and if I'm not here, I'm usually covering for Sean. Also at Fightful, and Fridays, I'm running the SmackDown post-show with the delightful Cresta. That's about it. But most importantly, vote for me. So I speak at Podcast Movement. Once again, the link is right there. We'll pin it in the comments, too, I hope. I hope Brian will do that for me, because I don't have the power to do that, because I'm not locked into our YouTube.
That's
but after the stream, you can find it there.
I'll try.
But what I love is if we make Ryan do that while we're on air, he has to narrate it, because he has to narrate all of his.
I don't know how to do that, Kate.
Well, I'll walk you through it after if you can narrate it. But Ryan,
all right.
Take us home.
Well, goodbye. All right. Let me go to our assets.
Congratulations to your new champion, Kenny, by God Omega.
Outro overlay. Turn up the volume. Turn up the funk. Outro.